Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, The History of the Life of Charamila, Text 54.
Labdhva nimittam avyaktam vyakta avyaktam bhavati uta yata yoni yata bijam sabhavena balesa labdhva nimittam avyaktam yata vyaktam bhavatyuta yata yoni yata bijam Sabhavena baliyasa Labdhva nimittam avyaktam Yakta vyaktam bhavatyata Yata yoni yata bijam Sabhavena baliyasa Nimittam avyaktam Vyakta vyaktam bhavatyuta Yata yoni yata bijam Subhavena baliyasa Labdhva nimittam avyaktam Yakta vyaktam bhavatyuta Yata yoni yata bijam Subhavena baliyasa Labdhva nimittam avyaktam Yakta vyaktam bhavatyuta Yata yoni yata bijam Sabhavena baliyasa Labdhva having gotten nimittam the cause of yaktam unseen or unknown to the person yakta avyaktam manifested and unmanifested, or the gross body and the subtle body. Bhavati, come into being. Uta, certainly. Yata yoni, exactly like the mother. Yata bijam, exactly like the father. Sabhavena, by the natural tendency. Baliyasa, which is very powerful. Translation. The fruitive activities a living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. This unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The gross body is product of the subtle body. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, yam yam bhāpi smaram bhāvam tyajat yante kalivaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatadhāva bhāvatana. Whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. The atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. Thus, the gross body acts during one's lifetime, and the subtle body acts at the time of death. The subtle body, which is called linga, the body of desire, is the background for the development of a particular type of gross body, which is either like that of one's mother or like that of one's father. According to the Rig Veda, if at the time of sex the secretions of the mother are more profuse than those of the father, the child will receive a female body, and if the secretions of the father are more profuse than those of the mother, the child will receive a male body. These are the subtle laws of nature which act according to the desire of the living entity. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna at the time of death, the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or, if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body, but will immediately get a spiritual body and return home back to Godhead. This is the process of the transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through pacts, P-A-C-T-S, pacts of sense gratification that can never be achieved, it is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. Om Vishnu Puraya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Samyukti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaura Bari Pucharani Nivishesha Sundar Bari Pucharade Sitarani Om Mangyanam Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksuru Miritam Chainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Chakutitanam Pavanyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha. Labdhva nimittam avyaktam, having gotten or obtained the unseen cause. Avyaktam means that which is not manifest. Vyaktam, that which is apparent to our senses or our perception. Vyaktam, avyaktam, unapparent. So it's unseen or subtle or unknown. But it's the cause. So Prabhupada explains that this is from your previous life, the karma that you've created, pious or impious, that's carried over. And then it comes into being in the form of a vyaktam of vyaktam, the body which is both vyaktam, manifest, that we see, the gross body, also called Stula Sharira. Sharira is body, and stula means gross. S-T-long-U-L-A, stula, stula Sharira. And Shukshma Sharira, subtle body. Prabhupada mentions also that subtle body is called a linga, or sometimes a kosha, a sheath. But basically, we have two bodies, the gross and the subtle body. There's the soul and the subtle body and the gross body. We have to know these three things. When we say, I am not this body, we say, I am not the gross body and the subtle body. The two are interlocking. They're part of the same causal network, because the subtle body are the subtle material elements, manas, buddhi, ahankara, and the gross body, apo, arilo, vayu, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then the subtle elements, manas, buddhi, ahankara. So they're all part of this is all part of material nature. I've already mentioned a number of times that if you look at the literature in the West about the soul or the mind, what's called the mind-body problem, the idea of the soul and the notion of the soul and the notion of the mind are conflated. If you look at Descartes, they really think the soul is the subtle body. They don't really understand the difference. It's always confused like that. So that's one of the big advantages of Krishna consciousness. It clears this up. It makes the idea of the soul, which is then some kind of metaphysical thing that has no apparent, is not manifest in any way. But we understand that consciousness is not a product of the gross and subtle body, but of the soul. And not only do we experience consciousness, but it is in fact that which enables us to have any experiences whatsoever. That consciousness does not arise out of these two bodies. Rather, it activates the two bodies and causes a living entity to experience joy, suffering, so on in the material world. So there are these two bodies, that's vyakta and avyakta. And this unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies, his previous unmanifested karma. And therefore there's a certain swabhava, a natural tendency. That was also the word used in the previous verse. Swabhavika, according to his tendency, by the fourth. But so again, swabhavena balayasa, the natural tendency. And then yatha yoni, yatha bijam. Yoni means the womb of the mother, the bija of the father, the seed will get a body according to male or female body. But that's always according to the past activities that are created. The living entity has his desires, his intense desires. This is sometimes called the knot in the heart. Hridaya Granthi. Karmashaya Hridaya Granthi. The asha means a strong urge or impulse to perform karma ashaya, to perform materialistic activities. So this karmashaya and this Hridaya Granthi described in Bhagavatam as the knot in the heart, meaning that it joins together, unites the living entity with the material body. Then the karmashayan is gone. And notice karmashayan means either pious or impious, it doesn't matter. any one of them will bring one to the material, keep one in the material world. So this is the process. Prabhupada quotes here the Bhagavad Gita, the gross body is a product of the subtle body. He mentions, you see, during this life, we see that the gross body is mostly active. At the time of death, the gross body fades into the background. It's shuffled off. But the subtle body now remains the predominating factor. Whatever one's mentality is. This whole process has been discussed actually at three places in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada here quotes from the 8th chapter, if you look at. This is in the context in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of the 7th chapter, Arjuna has asked or at the beginning of the 8th chapter, rather, Arjuna has asked questions. And one of them is prayena kale cha katam sneyasi niyata atmavihi. How can you be known at the time of death by those who are self-controlled or engaged in devotion? So how can the devotees know you at the time of death? Because in the previous chapter, Krishna has said, those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods, and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, prayana kale, even at the time of death. So Arjuna asks him, well, what are all these things? If you know him as the Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivika, Adi Yajna, explain those to me, and how those we can know you at the time of death. So then he says in the text 5, whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone attains my nature, madbhava. Here's the same word, svabhava, attains my body. Of this there is no doubt. Ante kale, at the end of one's time, lifetime, chamam evam, smaram, remembering me alone at the time of death, muktva kalevaram, giving up the body. That person, he goes and to madbhavam, to achieve my nature, and he says there's no doubt about it. And then he gives this general principle, which Prabhupada is quoting here, yam yam bhapi smaram bhava, whatever at all, yam yam this or that or the other thing, whatever one smaram remembers, bhava, again this word, his nature, whatever his total mentality that's there, when he gives up his body, tam tam evam, he gets the same thing. Sadata bhava bhavita, whatever that state that he is habituated to dwell in or remember. So Prabhupada says the process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Prabhupada described this as the final examination for your life. Maharaj Bharata, although a great personality, thought of the deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. This is the famous example, although he was actually quite advanced, because he had attained this. It's not, you know, such a gross material attachment for this cute little baby for Bambi. He became attached to a little Bambi. It was a really cute and pious animal and everything. And just that little thing. But then he became really upset. He fell in love with the deer, the fawn, on the fawn as a baby. He became in love with the fawn and would think of it all the time, as people who are in love do. And didn't show up looking for it at night. Fell off a cliff and died with his mind concentrated on this farm. So he became a deer in his next life. Although, because he was so advanced, he retained human consciousness even though he had the body of a deer. So that's exceptional. But still, because he was thinking of that deer. As though as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So that's what happens. As we act, there's a cycle going on. We have the subtle body is there. We get a certain gross body. Then the gross body performs activities. And then the subtle body also becomes more and more active, informed by the gross activities of the gross body. And Prabhupada says, if in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one to be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental spiritual, not material. This is what he says in this point. Either you will get the body of a devotee and continue if you're not completely transcendental, or you will go back to Godhead. Either way, the body will be suitable for devotional service, either here in this world, because there's still some karma or whatever, or one will go back to Godhead. Therefore, Prabhupada concludes, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. It means actually that we should come to the point, Kirtaniya Sadahari, that we are always chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The mind is automatically trained to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. There are times like japa where we have exclusive attention for chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Nevertheless, as we go through the day, driving a car or whatever, there's a lot of idle time. Most of what we do during the day doesn't require. And as soon as we stop doing some task and we sit, we daydream, different things come in our minds, think of this, think of that. You'll see it's how it's going on if you watch the mind. The mind has to be trained, so it's the default setting in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So Prabhupada said 16 rounds on the beads, innumerable rounds off the beads. Uh, Anyway, Krishna goes on and describes about thinking about him at the time of death. But let's, I think that's tomorrow's text anyways. We'll save that. But Krishna has already brought this up in the sixth chapter, because Arjuna has this doubt. He has a number of doubts. But his big doubt is that we see what happens, that if one is engaged in the path of spiritual life, and consequently devotes a lot of time to it, and doesn't invest anything or that much in material activities, but still, somehow or other, he falls down or just remains attached to material things, not successful. But what happens to that person? He says, he's become bewildered, and therefore he doesn't have spiritual success, and no material success either, because he wasn't working or spending all his time in business and everything like that. And he's a loser in both spheres. Wouldn't it be better at least if he just stayed in material life and got some temporary pleasure? But this way, he got nothing. He has no position anywhere. So what happens to this person who doesn't succeed? So then Krishna says, he gives a general principle, anyone who's engaged in Kalyana Krit, auspicious activities here, spiritual activities, does not vinashaya, tasya vidita. He doesn't ever meet with any destruction. One who knows good is never overcome by evil. So generally, he says like this, and then he gives basically two levels of people who, they're not successful, means you don't achieve transcendence. So one who, after just a little practice, that person at least gets the result of immense pious activities, and we'll go to the Punya Kirtan Lokam, the heavenly planets, the Indra Loka, and be able to enjoy there. And then when he comes back down again, as you must, that'll be a good birth. Either Suchinam Shimatam Ge, in the house of one who is who are Suchinam, pure people, so the spiritual activities will continue again, or Shimatam, those who are well off, elevated, aristocratic, or prosperous, or rich. So there you also have a chance to continue, although sometimes being in a rich family can be a disadvantage, like the sons of Kuvera. Or the other thing is that a person who is has a long practice, that person will take birth in a family of yogis. Yoginam eva kule, dhimatam, those who have not shrimatam, but dhimatam, the previous is shrimatam, right? They're endowed with wealth, but these are endowed with wisdom. This is a very rare birth in this world. By taking such a birth, he revives. So he doesn't go to the higher planets. Because they're not really... The heavenly planets are great, except for spiritual advancement, because it's so nice there. So this is the place. Bhargavarsha is the place where there are spiritual activities. So this is a better birth, that you're born here, but in a family of transcendentalists. Prabhupada says this means that one, he says here, in India there are many such acharya families, and they have, but he says now they're degraded, Goswami families and stuff like that. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalist generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupada Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord. And both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. That's the big advantage. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. So this is the best birth. And then on taking such birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogi principle. So here's that subtle body, see, from the previous life. Just a child immediately becomes interested in these things. The child Prahlad Maharaj, he was not interested in playing with toys, and when he did, he dressed up dolls of Krishna and stuff like that. He becomes attracted to the yogi principles even without seeking them. It's just automatically. That subtle cause is there. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. So in this way, one goes on. Then the other third place where this is discussed is in the 15th chapter, where Krishna is describing the jiva, which are his fragmental parts and are struggling with the six senses, with the senses and the sixth, which is the mind. So that's basically the gross and subtle body. You may say the five senses. Usually here they're talking about the knowledge acquiring senses, but those are the ones that are attracted to the sense objects in your priti. And then the other senses also become involved. So the gross and subtle body, he's conditioned in this world. And so then he says, the living entity in the material world, shariram, he gets a body and gives it up. Well, the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another. As the air carries aromas, thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So he takes one and quits one. Vayu gandham eva ashaya. So that's subtler, the air carrying aroma. A flower is a gross thing, but somehow the air carries, distributes the aroma of the flower, a subtle thing, at a far distance. So similarly, the subtle body carries the aroma, so to speak, of one's gross existence, and then you get another body like this. Then, this is starting at text 8 here, this text. But then he goes on to 9. then the living entity, taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He's mentioned these senses already. So here he says, shrotam. You might say instruments of hearing. And we have ears, but other living entities have different kinds of things where they can perceive sound. And chakshu, eyes. They also have different sorts of things for the perception of forms and colors. And sparsha, instruments for the perception of touch. That's skin and hair. Now you look at a cat, you see much more facility for the sense because of all that hair. Animals with hair, their sense of touch is obviously more developed. Rasanam, for taste, different tongues, and they taste really different things. Taste growth for different animals, and grahana, smell. Dog has his big nose and it's down close to the ground. And, you know, they have a much more acute sense of smell than ours. So, grouped about the head, he thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. Things become delightful to them according to this. Prabhupada says, if he has made his consciousness like that of a cat or a dog, he is sure to change to a cat or dog's body. So this is pet ownership, the dangers of pet ownership. You become really attached and you become like them. I once saw a coffee table book, I guess it was meant as a joke, but on the left hand side it had the dog and the right hand side the face of the dog and the right hand side the face of the dog owner. An extraordinary resemblance among them. And I used to drive past this tobacco store. Oh, tobaccos, newspapers, you know, down on the East Broad Street. There's all these guys hanging outside, and I swear you could see that they were lizards, snakes, crocodiles. It was like a whole group of reptiles just hanging out there. So people start to actually look like their mentality. So you get a cat or a dog. If he has fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he will change to the form of a demigod. And if he is in Krishna consciousness, he will be transferred to Krishna Loka, in the spiritual world, and will associate with Krishna. He says, it is stated here that the subtle body, which carries the conception of the next body, develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigration from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. The word karshati is actually prakritistani karshati. But also it means you pull it along, you know, the plow. You drag along. The subtle body goes, the soul goes and is dragging the mind and the senses. The senses, in the subtle body, the senses are also there in subtle form. We mentioned manas, buddhi, ahankara. But manas also includes within it the subtle senses in their subtle form. That's described elsewhere. So you enjoy these sense objects. Prabhupada says, the living entity adulterates his consciousness with the qualities of cats and dogs. In his next life, he gets a cat or dog body and enjoys. So people don't have to be pet lovers. They can simply live for the senses and want to enjoy that way. And you look at their lives, and they just eat, sleep, mate, and defend. They're animals. They don't do anything that's uniquely human. It's just sense gratification. Maybe a little more polished. The eating is on fine china. The sleeping is in fancy beds. The sex is, you know, anyway, all high-tech. But it's just, they're basically, it's animal life. So what happens? Their whole consciousness is animal consciousness. They're not use the facility for self-realization, not an inch. He says, consciousness is originally pure, like water. But if you mix water with a certain color, it changes. Similarly, consciousness is pure. For the spirit soul is pure, but consciousness is changed according to the association of the material qualities. So then it goes on. The foolish cannot understand. Vimudha, those who are, they cannot understand. As he says, they cannot see. How a living entity can quit his body. Nor can they see or understand what sort of body he enjoys and dispel of the mold of nature. So those are, they're just oblivious to this thing. So the fool, they anupashyati, they never see, but pashyanti jnana chakshusha, but those who have jnana chakshusha. They're those whose vision is the vision of knowledge, jnana chakshusha, those who have eyes of knowledge, they see. So vimuda na anupashyati pashanti jnana chakshusha. This is happening. Idiots can't see it. But those whose eyes have been trained in knowledge, you could say, they can see all this. Prabhupada says the word jnana chakshushaha is very significant. Without knowledge, one cannot understand how a living entity leaves his present body, nor what form of body he is going to take in his next life, nor even why he's living in a particular type of body. Remember the Yamadutta said you have to see three, the previous, this one, and the next. So with the jnana chakshusha, with eyes of knowledge, you can see this. This requires a great amount of knowledge understood from Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures, heard from a bona fide spiritual master. One who's trained to perceive all these things is fortunate. Every living entity is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He is living under certain circumstances, and he is enjoying under certain circumstances under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress under the illusion of sense enjoyment. This is what talk about a person who is vimudha. Persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. So these are the things, lust and desire. They make us stupid. So sense gratification is the cause of stupidity. That's really what it means. It makes us stupid. One becomes free from sense gratification, and then you become intelligent and gain knowledge. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see this, that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditional life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. And then Krishna emphasizes this again. The yogis can see all this. Yatataha. By a little effort, this endeavor, yatataha. Yatantaha. Yoginaha. They pashanti. They see. Then they're also described as atmani avatistayam, those who are situated in the self. They can see. But those who are apitta atmanaha, who have no self-realization, na enam poshanti achetasaha. They have achetasaha. There's another way of saying vimutha. They have no intelligence. They have undeveloped mind. They do not see this. Even though the same word for them, yandavta'api, even though trying, they can't see it. It's not there. It doesn't become apparent. So when one becomes Krishna consciousness, the whole world lights up in another way. One sees all these things happening. Jnana chakshusha is required. Sometimes the word is called Shastra Chakshusha. You see through the lenses or the eyes of Shastra. That points out those, look at this, notice this, you see this, this is what's happening here. This is what's gross, easier to see, subtle is a little harder to see. So all this is happening. The transmigration of the soul, I think, is not, in one sense, it's a factor of material nature. And there's sufficient empirical evidence from researchers. There's one guy, what's his name? Ian Stevenson. He's a professor at the University of Virginia, a psychiatrist. He began to investigate this. He began to find children who had spontaneous remembrances of their past lives, 5, 6, 7. And because a lot of the evidence that people report to give for this is based on hypnotic regression or things like that, that's maybe a little doubtful because of the possibility of suggestion. So he just found children who remembered their previous lives and then investigated those memories to see if they were valid or not. And he just found it was incredible that the things they couldn't know, they would say, I was in this village and this was my name and this happened to me. They would go to that village, you know, and find all these things. And then even more persuasive is that he noticed a number of these people who had these spontaneous remembers had various sorts of birthmarks or birth defects. And he was able by research to relate these to the form of death they had. One person, for example, had a small round birthmark on this cheek and a large, more ragged birth on that cheek, and was able to find the autopsy pictures or drawings as a person was shot through the head with an injury wound and the exit wound. Then the person would have a birthmark. And people had been hanged had strange marks of it. Anyway, we had photographs of it and everything. Because obviously that shock to the subtle body, you know, when you had they got the next gross body. He doesn't really understand exactly very clearly about the gross and the subtle body, but he has to postulate something like that, like a subtle body going from one to the other. So if there's empirical evidence for anything, there's empirical evidence for transmigration. It's not just we accept it because Krishna tells us, but if you look for it, you can find it. And actually a huge percentage of Americans believe in it. That's another thing. Even though they don't understand so much about it. But it explains many, many things. Anyway, that's the system. So that's also the Yamadutas. They know fully well about this. The main thing, is, of course, is to apply it in our lives so that we can have the influence of what happens in the next life. Okay? Questions?
I was thinking to your professors, what are sensitive reliefs that bring up the mind also?
Yeah, she's a great relief. Yeah.
The mind is really essential. How much do we emphasize psychology that sort of thing to help people?
I don't know. It depends upon the person. If maybe they're almost completely incapable, or they're so distracted, or pramadahan is crazy, mm-hmm. if they can't control their minds at all, maybe something else will help them. Mm-hmm. I have my doubts about it, but you can try on an individual basis to see like that. But the whole, it says in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the whole yoga process is really centered on the mind and controlling the mind. We naturally have to control your senses because if the senses are distracted and engaged in sense gratification, then it really becomes hard to control the mind. But even if the senses are fairly subdued, to find out the mind has still got a mind of its own. And it's not easily bendable to our will. And therefore there has to be this practice. Ultimately, if somehow people can be trained just to practice, you don't have to be so successful. But just if one is stubborn in practice or dedicated in practice, to chant the Hare Krishna mantra while trying to pay attention. See, the attention is under our power, more or less. We can take our attention here and take our attention there. Now, our attention tends to wander, but it's still in our power to take it back and again, pay attention to the Hare Krishna mantra. This is what the Prabhupada says about even doing it mechanically. I'm not particularly attracted to the Hare Krishna mantra. My mind is splayed out, but still, mechanically, I bring it back. Even that will begin to help. Just the attempt. If I chant the Hare Krishna mantra and just let my mind run wild with free association, then that will not be any good. That will actually cause me trouble in many ways. But if I just try, even it doesn't seem like there's much success, but just a sincere attempt will actually start to make changes. The persistence. But people who can't persist at all, I give them prasadam. But it's one of the things about people in Kali Yuga, they're always disturbed. Their lifetimes are short. They're munda. They're slow or bad. Unfortunate and above all, always disturbed. So the disturbance is there in the mind. That's one thing we have to overcome. So we also get people engaged. Sometimes for many people, they can't concentrate while doing japa. When there's kirtan, a lot of devotees, then they can become absorbed in the holy name, and so on. But Prabhupada said in one place in Bhagavatam that even a mentally deranged person can be cured by treatment of transcendental sound. So I think that's a